How are we today? Good?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Good,
How's
good.
lockdown treating you?
Well, I'm in one of those affected areas, so it's pretty monotonous life, but alhamdulillah. What do you do?
Alhamdulillah,
Are
that's
you
good.
affected by the lockdown? Where are you located?
Not much. Basically in Coburg at the moment. And
Oh, you're not in one of those postcodes.
no. So it's okay, it's been good, but I've been seeing the effects on the road, so it's quite obvious.
Is it? Is there police stopping people in that?
Alhamdulillah, it's been fine so far, other than the visible aspect of it.
Yeah. At least you can get out. Appreciate that.
Alhamdulillah. So thank you for taking the time for this particular recording.
No
I hope
worries.
to benefit from people such as yourself. Inshallah, so that others can benefit as well. For those of us who may not really know much about you, can you briefly introduce who you might be for the listeners, inshallah?
Well, I work at ISRA, Islamic Science and Research Academy of Australia, and we call it ISRA for short. So I'm one of the academics at ISRA, and so I mainly do course director work through the university, but I'm also one of the co-founders of ISRA. So we established ISRA in 2009, so we've been around for a while. And so I do a lot of the academic work, course director work, but I also run a number of community courses and community events as well.
Sounds quite interesting. I've noticed even before the pandemic, there was a lot of activities going on through ISRA. Is that still the case? Is there still stuff going on?
There is. So we've had to do a big transfer to online because of the COVID situation. And that's, so we've have been increasing our activities, and now it's a bit in limbo in that in Sydney, because we have a centre in Sydney and in Melbourne. They've started doing some of their on-site activities, but we're still continuing to do online events. We were quite familiar with the online, I guess, world, because our university courses are online. So that was to our advantage, I think. So we were able to start doing public lectures online. We used to do halakas, on site. We just shifted them to online. So we did maintain those activities, and we still keep, we're still trying to maintain the activities and community engagement. I think it's more important than ever, because there are a lot of people who are in isolation, some of us more than others because of the lockdowns. But generally speaking, it's a time where people are feeling isolated. So we're trying to maintain that and to continue our events.
What kind of halakas did they used to be on site?
So we had in Melbourne, we had Wednesday night halakas for women, and we would also have twice a week Quranic, what we call Quranic nights, that was open for brothers and sisters. So we were alternating between the two. So with the halakha, we would try to organize a special guest to come once a month. So we had people like Sara Sabah come, Maha Sukha, and Fatima Rad. So it's just to, bring people with different expertise. Other times it would be just like a study circle, which I would lead, and we would talk, read a book and discuss that. So trying to vary it. We're trying to have different speakers sometimes, different topics, and engage people differently. We had one actually halakha, which I thought was very important, from a where we had women from male dominant sort of industries, and how they found working in those industries as females, but also as Muslim women. So it was just really interesting to, hear their perspective. So we try to give a voice to a range of people that have so much to give to our community as well. But we also
Yes,
do
I've
our own
told
stuff.
that. Mashallah, it looked very interesting. So it is interesting in the sense that you've touched upon something, and that is that there is a lot of untapped potential within the community.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the programs which you described basically illustrates that as well. In terms of untapped potential, what is it that a student can potentially benefit through ISRA?
So I guess when you say ISRA, there's two branches. There's the community and there's the university side. Did you want me to touch on both, or one
Well,
in
it's
particular?
interesting that they're both.
Both, yeah. So I mean, they both, there's an overlapping benefit where it's, all the things we do, the events we do, we want to, in one way or another, you know, facilitate the person getting closer to Allah. That would be our ultimate, you know, hope, that ultimate drive or ultimate goal, that whatever we do helps them to achieve that, whether it's through their self-development, through their knowledge, through the skills, or even through the social interaction. Sometimes we just need to be around people that we draw strength from. We don't necessarily always have to hear lectures from them. So that's probably the underlying, driver for us. And so we try to do a variety of events with that in mind. And so the community events would be more social, more communal, and, a source of knowledge and inspiration for participants, as I said, through whether it's Quranic Nights, whether it's through Halakha, a seminar, webinar. But then we have the university side for those who want to do serious study. Not that the other one's not that serious, but it's a different type of studying, which includes, academia, obviously. And that's really for individuals who want more structured learning, more disciplined learning. But that could be studying for a number of reasons. As I said, interestingly, most of our students doing the university course do it for self-development, which amazes me. Our community amazes me, where they're willing to enroll in a course, a university course for self-development. Because at the beginning of my tutorials, the first week, I asked them, why did you enroll in this course? And you'd be amazed how many people say, because I want to learn more about my religion. So it's a big commitment, obviously, but it shows how seriously people take, wanting to learn about their religion. But then others want more of a career pathway out of it. So they may be doing it because they want to then do a Master of Teaching. So that seems to be a common trend with a number of our students. They do a Bachelor of Islamic Studies, so they get their grounded knowledge in Islam. Then they do a Master of Teaching, and then they become an Islamic Studies teacher, qualified teacher. So that could be another one. Others, the postgraduates, they may be doing it because they want to get involved in research, or they want to publish. They want to publish books or publish journal articles. So, and then we've got the Arabic. We've got the Master of Classical Arabic. And students may enroll in that because they want, again, to develop their Arabic language so that they can better understand, the Quran and other scholarly literature, or to help them with their teaching of Arabic. So it's quite a pool, quite a range of students that we have and why they study what they do.
So it brings me to another very interesting question that I was wondering about, and that is when someone is studying Islam less formally in the halaqat and masajid amongst mashayikh and so forth, how is it different to studying Islam at an academic level?
Yeah, look, there'll always be a place for our mosques to study under a sheikh. So I would, never want to sort of make them look unimportant. We need to have those avenues as well. But when you study at Islamic studies at the university level, it does take it to another level, where it's not just about gaining knowledge, but it's also about gaining knowledge, but also from different angles. So it's a bit like this scholar said this, and that scholar said this, and this scholar said that. So it creates a more open, platform for the, different ways that different scholars have talked about, Islamic content. And, this just shows the variety of, and when I say this is the Islamic tradition, so these are all within the, parameters of the Islamic tradition of our, centuries old history. But often when we're studying under, at a mosque, so we may just open a book and start reading it or focus on that content. So whereas when you study Islamic studies at university, you have readings from different sources. They're all reliable sources, but you bring them all together. But also when you study at university, Islamic studies, you're developing other skills because you need to write. You learn your writing skills. You need to analyze, so your analytical skills develop. You need to present, so your presentation and public speaking skills improve. So it's knowledge-based, but it's also skills-based. So it develops skills within a person. And I think also when you study at university, you have assessments. A lot of people don't like them, but it's amazing how they help with your development, with your knowledge development, because when you need to commit to writing something or you need to commit to presenting something, you just learn, your learning skyrockets, I believe. Otherwise, you know as well, you and I know, if I open a book and reading it, sometimes it feels like we're reading a novel. Like we just get distracted. Whereas if I've got a commitment, okay, I've got to read this and analyze it, there's another level of learning that happens. So I would say that that's probably the main difference between university and, you know, learning through a mosque or so forth.
That's actually quite interesting. In your opinion, based on what you said, do you think there's different personality that would study Islamic studies at a tertiary level as compared to a person who goes to Hanafi and so on?
It does, or it changes the person. So it definitely, that's why university study may not be for everyone, because they may think, I just want to read and I just want to talk about it. Whereas if you want someone who wants to be a bit more analytical, wants to be a thinker, it does require a particular personality type who wants to delve into those skills and delve into different sources simultaneously and, you know, discuss them and analyze them. So I would say it does, but most of our students are in their 20s, early 20s, late 20s. Although having said that, we've got students up to their 70s. So it does appeal to a wide range of students, but I find the younger generation is interested in deeper diving into their knowledge and to be able to discuss it and ask questions. And sometimes those questions, might be quite critical, but they want answers to those questions and they find that there's a space where they can ask those questions. But, you know, with our tutorials, I noticed that we do have a broad spectrum of students, which makes the tutorials very fascinating, because some would be like, no, this is it, this is that, because that's all they've known. And others who've known nothing about their religion, and this is a way that they want to learn about their religion. So that diversity in itself, which the university, platform offers, is a really good learning experience for them. Because normally if you go to a mosque, it's usually like-minded people that are coming there and listening. Whereas when you've got a diverse range of mindsets and diverse range of ages coming together in a tutorial, it's very interesting. I love it. I love that diversity and what you learn from that. So people can get challenged from it, but I think that's a good thing.
It actually makes me wonder about something else. And that is, can a dogmatic thinker succeed at an academic level of Islamic studies?
I think they would get challenged, but there are a few. Like I do see the journey of some of our students and those who do start off very dogmatic. And you may think, well, why do they enroll? It may be those who want a qualification of Master of Teaching. That's why they enrolled in it. You know, some of them do start changing because they go outside, I guess, the square that they've been in all their life. And that's the thing with a lot of Muslims. They've only been in a particular, very strict parameters and they've never heard of views outside. And when they start to, it can be very challenging for them. And so they could embrace it. And it doesn't mean they'll change their views necessarily, but they'll start to see, oh yeah, there's other different views out there and that's okay. But others may struggle with it and they might think, no, this is not for me. And, you know, they may not want to continue. So in a way, it can make or break them, if I can put it that way. But those who pursue, I think it really helps their growth. At the end of the day, the Muslim community is very diverse in Australia, around the world. If we can't acknowledge that and understand where people are coming from, that really limits us. And as I said, it doesn't mean we need to accept everything we hear, but we need to be able to hear it and see what their reasoning is. And if it's within the principles of the Islamic principles, it's still okay. And that's why we have different madhhabs, for example. There are different views out there and they're all considered to be acceptable madhhab. So it's part of our tradition really to have diversity. But yeah, going back to your question, some would struggle. I think most enjoy it and they immerse themselves in it. So yeah, I would say that it's a small minority that choose to not pursue it. And most people do their research before they enroll within the courses, to see, and they get an appreciation that there are different courses subjects being taught, and it is broad and it is diverse. So I think most people know what they're getting themselves into before they do. So yeah, those who leave you are quite small.
I'm sure you come across students who, in terms of their thinking, are way out there as well. You know, they're not dogmatic because they're completely out of the circle now.
I would say we have probably more that more the dogmatic approach, way out there. Normally, I would say those whose thoughts are way out there, they would not commit to an Islamic studies course. So I wouldn't say that there are too many of that type. They may prefer to focus on particular areas rather than doing fiqh, like jurisprudence or tafsir. They might prefer to do contemporary subjects. So I think they do, most would be accepting of the Islamic tradition. I would say the, you know, the classical Islamic tradition when they enroll, because we do in our courses teach like usul al-fiqh, usul al-tafsir, usul al-hadith. So when they see those subjects, you know, they have to be able to reconcile themselves with it to enroll in it. So generally, yeah, there's not too many out there. We do have some non-Muslims studying it, to be honest. That's probably an interesting part of it. And just, you know, having a tutorial where you've got students who aren't Muslim and you're talking about Islam from within the tradition, and, you know, that would be, and they're very respectful usually. They're there because they want to understand Islam from within the tradition. And they wouldn't say, well, why do you do this? Why do Muslims do that? Again, they have a high level of respect for the religion for them to enroll in a whole degree within.
But it's more of an intellectual curiosity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. In that turn as well, I'm curious about the types of PhD topics that might come across your way. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting ones.
Yes, there is. It's very broad. And so, you know, the way we see that diversity is because as one of the last subjects they do in the Master of Islamic Studies is a thesis. And in that thesis, we basically say to them, you can write it on whatever topic you want, as long as it's related to Islam and Muslims. And a lot of them then go on to do a PhD. When I say a lot, most of our PhD students are from our Master of Islamic Studies students. We have about 12 PhD students right now. It varies. Some are more, I guess, spiritual, if you can say it that way, and put it that way. Or there's one at the moment who's looking at, you know, mental health and how faith can help to address, you know, people with mental health issues. So it's bringing together Islamic spirituality in a way, or theology and psychology. And that seems to be an area of growing interest. Then you have another student who's looking at Islamophobia. So we're talking social sciences there. And she's a podiatrist herself. She did her master's with us. And now she's looking at how healthcare professionals can help to combat Islamophobia. We have another one that's looking at Islamic schools and how they're teaching of ethics and, you know, akhlaq, how that plays out within schools. Others will focus on tafsir of the Quran and a particular element of that. So we have one that's looking at secularism in some Muslim countries and how that plays out, what kind of secularism exists in Muslim countries that where there is secularism. So as you can see, there's a range from politics to spirituality to theology to tafsir.
Are there some topics which are more popular than others?
It's really quite diverse. I mean, with the thesis writing, it's very diverse, really. I would say quite a few focus on the classical Islamic studies, which is where they would want to look at hadith-related or tafsir-related. And because we have, supervisors who are experts in that area, maybe that's what draws them. But those kind of topics are quite popular. Or fiqh, jurisprudence, like one example, looking at the divorce in Australia as compared to divorce according to the Hanafi madhab. How do they correlate? But the social sciences, where, you know, we're talking about Islamophobia or mental health or, you know, Muslim societies. One, there's looking at converts. You know, how do converts adjust to living in Muslim communities? So it's hard to say that there's one particular theme. It's quite, when the more I think of it, the more I realize how diverse the topics are, as diverse as the students. It's probably an indication of how diverse our students are.
You mentioned madhabs. You know, is there a particular emphasis on certain schools of thought as opposed to others?
To be honest, with most of the subjects, the madhabs don't become a topic because it's not related. It's more in the fiqh subjects. And so, for example, with the fiqh of five pillars and usul al-fiqh, the Hanafi madhab is studied, but even there, the other madhabs are looked at, you know, where there's difference, and also looking at why they're different. How did the different scholars come to the different rulings that they did on, you know, certain practices or rulings? Even there would be sort of a platform of comparing or trying to understand the diversity. Like, what are the sources? What is the evidence that each scholar is putting forward for the rulings that they've provided? But that's probably one or two subjects. With the others, as I said, when you're talking about purification of the heart from spiritual diseases, or you're, you know, looking at usul al-din theology, women in Islam, madhab doesn't come into it so much.
So it's more of a generalistic or holistic point of view.
That's right. Yeah, it's more, what have different scholars have said on a particular topic, or if it's a contemporary one like Islam in the modern world, what have some contemporary Muslim scholars and sometimes non-Muslim scholars said about contemporary issues related to Muslims, whether it's about Muslims living in the West, understanding assimilation, integration. There you just would refer to, or your readings would be from, you know, scholars that talk about those topics. Yeah, so it becomes, whatever the area of topic is, you try to find the experts of that area, and you offer those to the students so they can get a wide range of knowledge in that area.
So if someone wants to go into this particular route, what would they actually need to prepare themselves with? How would they go about it?
So it depends. If it's undergraduate, the bachelor degree, most of our students come in as mature age students, which means that they're usually over the age of 20, 21. And normally it's because they're a mature age student, it's very easy to get in that life experiences are taken into consideration. If they've worked somewhere, that's looked at, because mature students are seen as much more ready to study in a way. So there's, the eligibility becomes easier. Whereas if you go straight in from year 12, then your ATAR becomes important. You need an ATAR of 65. Yeah, so that's the main thing. With the Master of Islamic Studies or Master of Classical Arabic, you need to have done a degree, an undergraduate degree, and that could be in any discipline. So for either case, undergrad or postgrad, you don't really need to do too much preparation. It's, I guess, the key thing, what I find with our students, as long as the willingness is there to learn and to put in the effort, they succeed. And we do have a lot of anxious students at this beginning, because they may not have studied for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. It's been a while since they've, you know, done a course, and, you know, it's a bit of a learning curve for them, but they adjust very quickly. And we do provide a lot of, like, first year, what we call first year academic mentoring, where, you know, in their first year of study, we'll be like, you know, do you need any help? We can look at your essays, provide you feedback. If you're struggling with this, give us a call. The mentors will give them a call once a month or so to touch base with them. So we try to provide a lot of that support. So it's not that hard. There's not too much preparation needed. Just that willingness, I would say, and passion to learn.
Preparation needs to be internal.
Internal, right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's internal. Mental preparation, and then it all comes through at the end. And I think, you know, when I hear of our students, you know, that's one thing they see different. When you study Islamic studies, you're learning about something that's so close to your heart. It's so different to if you've done a degree in engineering or, medicine or law. And that's the thing. A lot of our students are professionals. They've done other degrees and now they want to do something for themselves. So I think when something's closer to heart, which, you know, for a lot of people, their religion is, it makes it so much easier because it's your way of life.
Yeah, I imagine it would be easier to study Islamic studies with Muslim academics as well, as opposed to those who are studying it as a field rather than as a spirituality.
Definitely. I think because we're talking about it from within the tradition, and the academics are passionate about Islamic studies because it's their faith. All our academics, all our staff are Muslim. That makes a huge difference. It gets, you're trying to relay knowledge, but you're trying to inspire a person with their faith. You're trying to help them, as I said from the beginning, to get closer to Allah through this journey. They can have other purposes for studying as well, but at the end of the day, you want them to develop their knowledge and develop, strengthen their faith for their own benefit. And when you have that as your main purpose as a lecturer, I think students feel that and they benefit from that. And hopefully this knowledge then becomes reliable as well because you're within the tradition. And one thing is those staff that do teach the classical traditions, like classical sources, like tafsir, hadith, and so forth, they've got that knowledge base as well. So they've done their studies in that area. So they're quite experts. They're experts in their field, yeah.
Not quite experts, they are experts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're experts, not quite, yeah. I'm trying to...
So if someone wants to get in touch with you...
They can do that through the website, I guess. Like, I would recommend that you have a look at our ISRA website, which is www.isra.org.au, and there ISRA is ISRA. Or they can email me. I'm not sure how I would make my email address available, but I get a lot of the inquiries as a course director, zkeskin@csu.edu.au. So they're more than welcome to just email us, or through ISRA Facebook Messenger, they can contact us through there as well. Where there's a will, there's a way. They can contact us in all those through all those different avenues.
So, look, I thank you for your time and just educating us about ISRA and what ISRA is all about, and perhaps even giving us an idea of what it is like to study Islamic studies from an academic level. I think this is very important for members of our community in general, and specifically for those who want to go into this particular direction. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yours too. Thank you for these podcasts. They're brilliant. Listening to different people, different perspectives. Great opportunity. Thank you.